Acts. Tonight's shir is L'ilui Nishmas, our son Gavriel, whose shul shem is tonight, Chaim Gavriel ben Aaron Chanina HaKohen, and that's what everyone should make a bracha and enjoy the snacks, L'ilui Nishmaso. Whoever was not here last week, I apologize, but there was a request very, very quickly to just finish up one source that we didn't get to last week, and then we'll begin with tonight's new topic. Just a background, last week we were talking about the concept of Ben Adam La'atzmo, that besides Ben Adam La'chaver, Ben Adam La'makom, a person also has to worry his own, take care of his own midos, his own responsibility to himself. And there's a piece from Rav Kook in his Siddur, Olas Riyah. It's not, this piece is not on a specific part of davening, it's his introduction to Pesach. Before he starts with the davening of Chag HaPesach, he says, I'm going to introduce what Pesach is all about, and he defines what a Ben Choron is, opposed to someone who's an Eved. And he explains that you would think, a basic definition, a Ben Choron is someone who's free to do whatever he wants, and Eved is under someone else's rule and subjugation. But Rav Kook says that's not the case. You could have somebody that has no free time of his own, who's totally dependent and totally relying on the will of his master, and he could be more free than somebody who you would think is his own boss and can do whatever he wants. Because what true chayrus and true avdus is being true to yourself, is in yourself. If you feel free within yourself and an internal feeling that you're not dependent on anybody else and you're not looking to anybody else for what should I do, then you're a free person. And if your internal spiritual clock is set to the right time and that you're in tune with what your ruach and what your neshama expects for how do you for you to behave, and you're in touch with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you, then you're a free person. Or someone else, he says, who's always worried and looking for what everyone else wants him to be, and looking towards what everyone else thinks he should be, that even though he may be free, and he may be running around and doing things which we would describe as a free person, he's really a slave. And that's why the concept of Ben Adam La'atzmo is so important, because you have to get to know and you have to develop yourself, and to really reach true freedom of being in touch with your neshama. That was just from last week. If you want to read it, that's nice Hebrew, nice language, and that's on last week's sheet. So now to our first, whoever last week was the introduction to Pirkei Avos, and now we're going to begin with the first Mishnah. Probably going to have at least two shiurim on the first Mishnah. So we'll begin by reading the Mishnah. And everyone probably knows the Mishnah by heart. Aleph, Aleph, and Avos. Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai, Umasal Yehoshua, Yehoshua Zakenim, Zakenim Leneviim, Uneviim, Masur Lanshi Chanes Sagdola, Vehemar Mushal Shadvarim, which we're not going to focus on tonight. Havu Mesunim Bedin, Vahamidu Talmidim Harvey, Vasu Siag LeTorah. But before we focus on their statements of what they said a person should do, the Mishnah has a whole introduction. Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai, and then he passed it to Yehoshua. Yehoshua passed it to the Zakenim, who passed it to Neviim, finally to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. So what's the significance of that being the introduction to Avos? This is a little bit of a side, but the Bartanura, the well-known parish on the Mishnayos, the Bartanura, he says that a person should not think, that when it comes to every other Masechta and Shas, that's Halacha. So we have a clear Mesorah about what the Halacha is. It was passed down from Har Sinai, Moshe said this, and then Chazal developed that, and it's all one straight Mesorah. But when it comes to Midos, and when it comes to Hashkafos, there is no Mesorah. A person should do what he feels is right, as long as it's in line with basic Torah principles. Says the Bartanura, no. Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai, that just as much as there's a Mesorah, and how we paskin, or what the definition of an esrog is, so too there's an equal Mesorah in terms of how a person should act, how a person should think, and how a person should feel. And that's a basic answer to what it's doing in Maseches Avos, and it's also, once that's true, trying to emphasize the importance of Mesorah and showing us a clear link to Har Sinai. And a question that, if you think about it, is a little bit of a troubling question, is what is it? What's the significance to a Mesorah? Why is it so important that the way the Torah was been given was through the fashion of Mesorah?
Through
Har Sinai, right? So it traces all back to Har Sinai, and it's more than just tracing back to Har Sinai, and it's also, you see from the Mishnah, that it's always a specific person who received either a specific individual or a group of people who received that Mesorah. It's not just that we happen to have a Mesorah that traces back to Moshe Rabbeinu to Har Sinai, but it's through specific individuals. Yeshua Zakim, Nevi, Mashi, Knesset Gdola, and so on. So to take a step back and understand the need for and the importance of the Mesorah. So the first commentator on the Mishnah that's going to describe what exactly the Mesorah is all about and why it's so important is Rabbeinu Yonah. Same Rabbeinu Yonah, I think we mentioned last week, who wrote Shari Tshuva, and the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, who's in the back of Brachos. That's a collection of his thoughts on the Gemara from his Talmidim. We have other writings from him. But he's very well known for his comments on Avos. So what's Moshe Kibel Torah from Sinai? What did he receive from Sinai? Bein Torah Shebichsav, Bein Torah Shebalpeh. That is a significant point, which hopefully we'll return to. Both of those are the Mesorah, Torah Shebichsav and Shebalpeh. Sha Torah Beferushah Nitna. The Torah was given, this is the second source on the sheet, the Torah was given with all its commentators, with all its different interpretations, understandings. It wasn't just given, you know, here are the mitzvahs and run with it. It was given with explanations. Shebelow Kain, because if we don't have the explanation, the perish of the Torah Shebal Peh on the Torah Shebichsav, we wouldn't be able to move. We would not be able to understand anything, very little of Torah. Yefshar la'amod ba, how could we keep the mitzvahs properly? And he gives a very fascinating example. I would have thought he would give the example of the Rambam. The Rambam's example of why we need the Mesorah is so crucial is he quotes a few examples, but two examples that he famously quotes is pre-Eitz Hadar and Ayin Tachas Ayin. Right? The Torah says, on Sukkot you should take a pre-Eitz Hadar. Translate those words. I don't know how the English translates it exactly, but it's a fruit, a tree fruit that's beautiful. So how are you supposed to know what in the world that would be?
Right.
So what is that? So it's an esrog. So how do we know that it's an esrog? So the Gemara has a drasha of figuring it out. But the Rambam says those drashas are just a way of adding to it. But really, the way we knew it was a Mesorah from Har Sinai. Hashem said when Hashem said over to Moshe, Pri'et Hadar, he told him esrog. And then Moshe told Yeshua, and it continued, and it's built into the Mesorah that Pri'et Hadar means esrog. And the same is true, the Rambam says, but ayin tachas ayin. If you read a literal read of the Chumash, so a person damages his fellow man, pokes at his eye, so ayin tachas ayin, so we're going to do the same to him. Obviously we know, one of the famous examples, that it really means that he has to pay, he doesn't lose his eye. So how do we know that? So the Gemara in Baba Kama has a series of drashos, and has a whole daf that discusses that topic, and the Rambam says that's an addition. Really, we know it from the Torah Shebal Peh. So you see those two examples, we wouldn't have learned a simple pasuk without the Torah Shebal Peh. But Rabbeinu Yonah picks a different example. Shari Katsuv, Lo Sigzol. It says don't steal. So if I would have had the Torah alone, the Torah Shebichsav, I would have said, what does don't steal mean? So we know the difference between a ganav and a gazlan. So a gazlan is someone who takes by force, when people are see, he takes from the person himself as opposed to sneaking behind his back. That's a gazlan. So that's what I would have said. The Torah is telling me I can't do that. I can't be a highway robber and take someone's stuff. And that's it. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, but it's more than that based on Torah Shebal Peh. B'chol ha-nezikin b'chol also halav. Not just stealing from him directly. All of Nezikin, all of Maseches Baba Kama, that talks about how I have to guard my shore and my ish, right? I have to guard my axe and my property and my fire and all the different avos Nezikin and all the details of those halachos. And all of Maseches Bambetzia about what I own and disputing over property. And all of Nezikin is included in the Pasuk of Lo Sigzol. V'hein min ha-Torah al-pi kabbalas Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom B'Sinai. And Nezikin is a concept in the Torah. It's just through the Kabbalah, we expand the law of Lo Sigzol, the Alpha Pishlo Nichtavu. And this Rabbeinu Yonah is important, not for now, for like a Baba Kama shir, because it's a whole discussion at the beginning of Baba Kama, what's the source so you're not allowed to damage someone else's property? And there's different opinions in the Rishonim. And this Rabbeinu Yonah is often quoted that it's a halach and Lo Sigzol. Other Rishonim say that it's based on Lo Sigzol would not cover it. The law of Gzela doesn't go that far, and it's really based on Vahasal Recha Kamocha or Shavas Aveda. There's numerous opinions about this. But that's an example. V'okasev ben dam l'dam ben din l'din ben nega l'nega. V'kame maras damim v'kame dinim mischalfin. Right, that pasuk saying that when you have a doubt between different types of blood, different types of dinim, different types of nega tzaras, so you should go to the Kohen, or you should go to the Sanhedrin, and they're going to answer the question for you. So you see from the pasuk that we need to separate, and we need to distinguish between different types of dam, and different types of din, different types of nega. That shows you that there's intricate details that are not explicit in the pasuk that you need the guidance of Chazal for. We don't know exactly what a nega of saras looks like without a mesorah. What way do we go? How do we keep the mitzvos? That's why it's so crucial. And even more so, the way, if you think back, we're so used to having our Mishnayos right in front of us. The way it was set up originally, it was specifically given over through Mesorah. It wasn't supposed to be written down. So you see how crucial the Mesorah in this fashion of being passed down from one Chacham to another. It's not enough just to have a book. You know, we're living in a post-facto of after they undid the halacha of not being allowed to write down Torah Shebal Peh. But the ideal way was that it would be passed down Baal Peh from Rebbe to Talmud to always have that link back to Har Sinai. You shouldn't forget that it's not a separate book that's on the shelf. It's connected. Yes, please.
Yeah,
When it says Moshe Kibel Torah Mishinai, why doesn't it not say Moshe Kibel Torah Mishinai?
Okay, that's an excellent, excellent question.
Because
that
the rest of the Mishnah
that's
has names.
Excellent question, and there's two, but just maybe we can get to all the opinions of the Mepharshim another time, but just to add to your question, there's another important difference that the Mepharshim pointed out. It's Moshe Kibel Torah Mishinai, Umasra LeYoshua. So A, it says the name, and B, the verb by all the other people in the line is kibel. Musser, right? It was given over by Moshe. It said kibel. So they have different opposite approaches to that answer. For in terms of kibel, some of the Mepharshim point to the fact that it would not be right to say Musser. Right, Hashem was Musser the Torah to Moshe, because it's not true in the full sense that Moshe gave Yoshua everything that he had, but Hashem. It's not possible for Moshe to receive everything that he had. Hashem can't give him the entire Torah of every understanding of the Torah. As we learned last year, the Ramban quotes a Chazal. The Ramban in the introduction to Chumash says, quotes a Chazal, that there are Nun Shari Bina. There are 50 gates of wisdom, and Hashem and Moshe received 49 of those 50 gates. But to have a full, perfect understanding of God and His Torah, you know, it's not possible for a human to have. So that's why it doesn't say Moshe received, it says Moshe kibel Torah instead of Hashem being Moshe the Torah, because Moshe received whatever he could handle. But Hashem didn't give him everything there is to offer. And why it says Mishinai, also a lot of different approaches, but one very popular approach is because what does Sinai represent? What made Har Sinai different than all other mountains? A famous Medrash, that Har Sinai was humble. So the Mishnah is trying to teach us a remez here that how did Moshe, how come we got to be Moshe? Why did we choose Moshe? Yes, Simi.
Is this from Shavuos?
This relates to Shavuos, yeah. You could save this for your Shavuos table. This is a perfect thing to say on Shavuos, but it was through his Anivus that he was like a Sinai that he was Zocha to Kabbalah Satorah. But the Maral, if you want to take a look in his parish in Pirkei Avos, he has a nice long discussion about this. Excellent question. So the Kabbalah has, in an ideal sense, goes from person to person. Possession Amar, and now how do we know this is going to be a big? How do we know you're not allowed to?
You said it doesn't say all of the Torah because he couldn't possibly have gotten all of the Torah.
Right. The deepest levels of Torah.
By using the word Torah without Ha Torah instead of Kol Ha Torah,
kind of
indicates that it wasn't everything.
Okay,
by
so that's going to be our step two. We're going to try to figure out not so much, but what exactly was given over at Har Sinai. So that will answer your question, hopefully. So Rabbeinu Yonah just now continues to show the source of how we know that ideally Torah Shebaal Peh should remain Baal Peh, because ki al pi al dvar me'ilo karati itcha bris v'yes Yisrael, al pi, the Gemara makes the Joshua, al pi, with your mouth, zu Torah Shebaal Peh. Lamdecha she Torah Shebaal Peh lo nitna li kasi, if it's not supposed to be written down. Biksiv, now this is going to answer partially your question, Isaac's question, how do we know what was given, based on the Gemara in Brachos, v'ner l'chas luchas evan v'atorah v'amitzvah. But it says that, and later after Har Sinai, what did Hashem give to Moshe? Luchos ha'evin v'hatorah v'hamitzvah. He had the luchos, he had Torah ha'mitzvah. What are these things? Says the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Hei, Torah is Torah shebichsav v'hamitzvah Torah shebal peh. Nim says Omer, the pasuk is telling us, not only did Moshe receive Torah shebichsav, he also received Torah shebal peh. V'kasuv shenikra Torah shebichsav v'apir shenikra Torah shebal peh. There's the kasuv, the written thing, and there's the explanation of it. Moshe learned all this from Hashem. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, based on the simple explanation of the Gemara and Brachos, all of Torah Shebaal Peh, all the Perushim of every Pasuk and every Halacha and every Mitzvah was given in Har Sinai. Before we go to the root of Masorah and what the significance of it more, just as to address this question of what was given in Har Sinai, this is a big discussion amongst the Rishonim and the Achronim, because if you take an extreme approach, which you could, there's a Gemara in Menachos, that's another Midrashim that say, I'm sure you've heard this before, never thought about exactly how to wrap your head around this idea. The Gemara says that Afilu Masha Talmud Vasik Asil L'Chadish was Nitna L'Moshe Mishinai. Even what a sharp, smart Talmud would make a Chiddush about thousands of years later, that was also given to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. So on a simple level, it's very hard to understand what that means. You know, it gets into like foreknowledge and bechira almost. If I'm gonna, you know, someone's gonna give a whole shiur, so that exact shiur with all the details and his chiddush was given over at Har Sinai. So that's one extreme. Whereas the other extreme would be to say that no, what it means is Torah is basically Torah shebichsav and the necessary direct Torah shebal peh, which is needed to explain Torah Shebichtav, but that doesn't mean that every machlokas and every issue that came out in the Gemara was given at Har Sinai. And there's really three approaches. The Gaonim seem to say, there's an opinion of the Gaonim, there's Rabbeinu Hananel that seems to say this, that Rabbeinu Hananel is talking to Gemara in Sukkah that has a machlokas about a garata. It's not even a halachic machlokas, it's a famous Gemara, but where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that maybe there's 10 B'nai Ali in the world, maybe there's a certain number of B'nai Ali in the world, and if not, there's at least two B'nai Ali in the world, if not me and my son. Right, there's only two people who are at a high level. And then the Gemara asks a contradiction, that it says there's a lot more B'nai Aliyah, and then Rava and Rav Zera try to give an answer. And Rabbeinu Hananel on that Gemara says that the answer that they're having in Machlokas about how to explain that Agadita was a Kabbalah they received from Har Sinai, which is fascinating, because that is not needed to explain the Torah Shebichtav. You know, Hashem didn't have to tell Moshe that there's going to be this Machlokas, you know, 1,000 years later, that about a Nagalic statement that wasn't even said yet in Har Sinai. So the Gaonim, and there's other statements of the Gaonim where they seem to take this approach, that really all the details that we have in the Gemara were somehow set over in Har Sinai. So then the question becomes, so then what's Machlokas? So the Gaonim explain what Machlokas is. Or Shira Gaon says, and there's a famous Igeres Rosh Shira Gaon, which is his introduction to Torah Shebaal Peh, which is recommended reading to understand what the Gemara is all about, Torah Shebaal Peh. So in his Igeres, he says, what's the source of all machlokas? It doesn't make sense there should be machlokas, because everything should be a clear Masorah. The machlokas was given over the Masorah, so Rosh Shira Gaon says that all machlokas was due to Shechcha, that really there shouldn't be machlokas, but because the Masorah wasn't perceived perfectly, it wasn't protected perfectly, and there was, and due to the Galus, we forgot certain things, and then to try to remember them, they ended up fighting about what exactly the details of what the true Masorah was. So all machloksim are due to not properly understanding and forgetting. Which there is a Gemara that does mention that certain things were forgotten over a certain amount of time, but it doesn't mean that that's the source of all machlokas. And the Rambam, in another introduction to Torah Shebaal Peh, which is his introduction to the Perush Mishnayos, and before he wrote his explanation of the Mishnah on Zrayim, the Rambam gives an introduction to what Torah Shebaal Peh is all about and the different levels of Torah Shebaal Peh and Drashos, Halacha Moshe Sinai. So he deals with this question as well. And he says, to say such a statement is ridiculous. There's to believe that all machlokas is based on forgetfulness. Machlokas is due to interpretation. And what was given at Har Sinai is Torah Shebichtav and certain Kabbalos and Halacha Moshe Sinai that are needed to explain the Torah Shebichtav. But all the details that are to come out from there were not necessarily given in Har Sinai if they weren't necessary. And
so if we ended up writing it all down, why didn't we start out having it written and not have
we
to go
didn't
through
we weren't supposed to do that.
Right, so why is
the
it not more ideal?
The process of forgetting and now having something that's completely
I wouldn't call it imperfect, because I think that was the design of the way we have it now. We have the tools. Part of what is unique about the Masorah is that we have the tools to even deal with machlokas. If it would have been that
we have a lot of takers, right?
According to those are all strong questions on the Gonim that I'm sure
So isn't a good comparison of us at Har Sinai almost like a baby being born? Do you see the same type of thing? Doesn't a baby get taught
all the Torah?
All the Torah that comes out,
right?
And I mean, same what you just
right.
said about.
Well, we didn't forget it in a flash, you know, as an ideal thing, right? But we didn't forget it in a flash, you know, for a purpose. It was the way the Golden Tomb to say it was due to the Gullus that things got forgotten. It wasn't an ideal situation.
It was gradual.
Right, it was a gradual process. The Gemara does say that B'yamei Avelu Shel Moshe, when Moshe passed away, it sounds like that wasn't a gradual process.
So
then
what was
the halachas were forgotten.
Was the Torah given in its entirety, in every little detail, or just
I would say more than basic, right? Exactly. So to speak, and we'll see what the third approach is. But the Gaonim are saying every detail. The Rambam saying a lot of details of Torah Shebaal Peh were given, but some developed when the Chazal have a machlokas about a drasha. So that is a valid machlokas. So they're saying based on how do we properly interpret this pasuk, and they were given the right based on also a Kabbalah of how to make a drasha, but they were given the right to actually create a chiddush and something that wasn't necessarily built into the original Masorah that was given to Har Sinai, but it becomes part of the Masorah due to their way of making drashos. Exactly. So according to the Gaon,
can I just darshan like this? I might be wrong. I darshan that everything was given, every machlokas, every drash, Everything was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it wasn't fully comprehended at Sinai. Even as we said, even Moshe couldn't comprehend everything.
So that moves towards the third approach. What you're saying is very similar to what we'll say right now. We've basically summed up the Rambam. The third approach is based on a Ritva and a Maseches Sofrim. The Ritva is in a different context. The Ritva is talking about the concept separate here of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, which fits with this, right? The Gemara says that even though we might paskin like Beis Hillel, but Beis Shammai is no less of Talmud Torah and no less valid, and it's Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Both opinions, even though we may have a psak like one, not the other, they're both Dvar Hashem. So what the Ritva says is, what does that mean? How could it be that they're both right? The Ritva says that when Moshe, based on the Maseches Sofrim, that when Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai, Hashem didn't tell him, this is the exact halacha and there's no wiggle room. What Hashem said is that everything, let's say, I think he gives an example of a sheretz, right? Something that's impure. He says that, because you know, there's a Gemara that it says that something can be matar the sheretz. So what does that mean? So he says that a sheretz has panim letuma, panim letara. There's sheretz has aspects to it that could become tame, things that would make it tar. And really both sides were given, and then we interpreted and said, oh, you know, it must be based on the klalim and the rules that we have that the sheretz is tameh, and we decided the sheretz is tameh. And the Or HaChaim in Parshas Tazri also says a similar idea, that what was given to Har Sinai is not like the Rambam, that what details were given, some details were, some details weren't. What was given to Har Sinai was everything. You could really have your cake and eat it too, according to this opinion. Everything was given, but not everything in the exact detail, that Rava said this and Abaye said this. The concept, the idea was given in the way he says it, bekoach, right, as potential of understanding, and then our job, and this is where machlokas would come in, is to try to unravel what exactly it means befoel in actuality. So, it becomes very important, because then machlokas and chiddush, right, according, like Isaac said, if you learn like the Gaonim, there's no such thing as a chiddush. What a chiddush does is it just gets back to what we originally knew. That's your chiddush. So you got back to what we originally knew.
It's a chiddush.
That's why it's a chiddush, but it's a chiddush to go back. And to, according to the Or HaChaim and according to this Maseches Sofrim, what we're saying is that, no, you're unraveling what it meant the whole time, but those tools to understand it, please take. We're not given yet. So that's just, there's a lot more and there's a lot of literature on that, but that's just a basic of what was given in Har Sinai, and then it should have implications for us.
So we're saying like the tshuvot given by the Rebbeim are the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, when there were questions
exactly
from the concentration, those who were accounted for on Har Sinai.
So according to this approach, the potential for that understanding was accounted for, not the details. You know, Hashem didn't.
Wait, but the potential for understanding is one thing. The details, I'm familiar.
No, so that would only be true according to the Gaonim, but I don't think you go that far. I think what the Gaonim would say is that they're applying the knowledge that was given there to those cases, right? Obviously, there are new cases that are come up, but what we're just doing is we're applying knowledge that was already existent there.
Obviously, there are new cases according to the first interpretation.
Right.
There were no new cases.
So I don't know if they're going to have a cutoff point on like the time of the Gemara. You know, that's hard to. If you really take literally, which you could, but then your question is a very strong question that I don't have a proper answer for. If you really take literally, filo mashe talmud vasik asid l'chadish, then you'd be right. But then, you know, that's hard to put your head around that. For sure, there probably would be a cutoff. Yes, Sammy?
Did we get the Torah at Har Sinai?
Yes, we get. So the question is, which details of the Torah we got at Har Sinai? But that's exactly what we're discussing. So the Mishnah says the source of Har Sinai is from Moshe Rabbeinu, but because we're approaching Parshas Lech Lecha, we could see that the idea and the importance of Masorah even takes its roots back to Avram Avinu. We'll just skip down to the last source on the sheet. Avram Avinu says to Hashem, they have after, this is a prelude to the Bris Ben Bessarim. So after Hashem promised him that his descendants are going to be like the sand of the ground, so Avram still hasn't seen that promise fulfilled yet. So Avram, right? Hashem Elokim Mati Tein Li Vanochi Olech Hariri Uven Meshek Basi Hu Demesek Eliezer. What have you given me? I'm still without a son, and who's the one that's going to inherit me, everything that I have? Only my faithful servant Eliezer. I have no children, and this person in my household is going to inherit from me. No, don't worry. Eliezer's not going to be your ratio. Who's going to come out from you? Yitzhak eventually is going to be your ratio. And he takes and he looks outside, and there's the bris ben habisarim. So what's he saying? What's his complaint? What's his word? Uben meshek vesi hu domestic Eliezer. And this, I think they translate a steward of my household is domestic Eliezer. So says Rashi, what does domestic mean? He was someone who would give out things, he would provide for Avram. That's the literal translation. What does the Medrash say? Well, the Medrash Agada, Sherada from Malachim Ad Dimeshek, he chased away the Malachim that Avram had a battle with. Ubitalmud Darshu, and the Gemara in Yuma says in the beginning of the third parak, Nutrikin. You split up the word. It's a bunch of words coupled together. Dolo Mashka Mitoris Raboli Acherim. Dolo Mashka, he gives out to drink from like a well, almost, from the Torah of his Rav, from the Torah of Avram to Acherim. So if you, he's a Talmud, he's a faithful Talmud of Avram. So if you want to read that back into the Pasuk, Avram's saying, what have you given me? All I have is this faithful Talmud who gives out my Torah and spreads it to other people. So if you read that into the Pasuk, so then you have a very strong question. So what's he complaining about? Okay, we understand that obviously the importance of having a son, but why would he speak specifically now about Eliezer's strengths and his Milos in a place where he's complaining that I don't want this person to be my only connection for the future? He's saying he...
It doesn't make any sense. Because why would Avram feel that he has to give anything to somebody who's not his offspring?
So I think he has
to... It's figurative.
It is figurative, in the sense that Avram has a message that he needs to pass down. Avram created a chiddush in the world. He was the first one to discover the Amunah of Hashem and the oneness of Hashem, and he needed that to continue. So if no one else was around except for Yitzhak, so Eliezer is trusted to be able to continue that mission. His mission can't die. His mission has to continue beyond him. So if Avram saw no one in front of him except for his faithful servant, that's going to be the choice for the one. So I don't think he's talking about Yerusha here the way we refer to Yerusha as his wealth. He's referring to the Yerusha of the what he's established of the Amun and Hashem and all that Avram stands for.
We're talking about Masorah here? Is that the Pasuk, the relevance?
Well, we'll see the relevance to Masorah here in a second based on this Magish of Chazal that he's Dola Mashka Mitoras Rabbali Acherim. Avram's saying that Eliezer, my servant, who's the Mesek, who gives my Torah to others. But that's, you see, a concept of Masorah, passing down my Torah to others. So why is that a complaint? So I don't remember exactly who says this, but I think a lot of people say it. I've heard it many times. It really is a complaint. What Avram's saying is, Dola Mashka Mitoras Rabbala Acherim, all he does is he could just take from the well. He takes my Torah like it's water, and he passes that to anybody else. He never made my Torah part of himself, that he gave his own unique approach to it. He's just like someone who passes off from the well. He's not the chef. He doesn't add to the service that he's giving. He's just passing water off. He learns my Torah, he understands my Torah, he understands what I'm all about, and he could just repeat what I say. Whereas what I'm looking for a Yitzhak who's not only going to follow my footsteps, but he's going to build upon me, he's going to add to what I've established, he's going to continue my Masorah in the way in which the mission describes it is continued, which we see that from Har Sinai, the Torah has layers added to it, a new understanding, new depths. What was his Masorah? We're not going to get into the whole, which you could argue, we're not going to get into the whole idea that Avram Avinu did learn the Torah and he kept the Torah. We'll leave that aside. We dealt with that last year a little bit. But what he did is that Masorah doesn't just mean what we receive from Sinai. What we're seeing is that the root of the idea of Masorah, something needs to be passed on, to find someone who's going to be able to take your teachings and make it part of themselves and continue with that, is sourced in Avram Avinu. His Masorah was, what did he did a tremendous thing. He stood up against the whole world, explained to them an idea and a concept that shook the whole world, caused them a lot of trouble for it, and he was successful at this point, right? As we see when he went to the battle, it says that he brought all the right Ashar Nefesh Asu B'charan. He brought people Tachas Kanfei Shechina. So if Avram passes away and there's no one to take those messages and ideals further, so then what happens to that? Where's the Jewish people? Where's Har Sinai? It probably would not have been the same way. That's why Hashem had to ensure through this bris that there's going to be a Yitzchak. There's going to be someone that Masorah doesn't just mean Har Sinai per se. Masorah means even for us, the span, Masorah connects all the generations. We have things and ideals and things we've established for our own families that should and need to be passed down. And that's what Avraham Avinu is feeling at this point, that Eliezer, very nice, he understands what I'm saying, he can explain it to others, but he's not a Yitzhak. He's not going to be what we'll describe what a Yehoshua was, to take the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu and make it a part of himself in a way that will sustain the future generations. And that's what Avraham Avinu was saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he can't just have an Eliezer, he has a Yitzhak. And just like we see that from Avram to Yitzhak, so what's the role of Yehoshua in the Mesorah? Right, the Yehoshua, the first one who actually received the Mesorah from another person. So look at this fascinating Rambam. You'll see this very strong question here. This is the fourth source. It's the Rambam. He describes this in his Hakdamah LaParish Mishnayos. There he describes this more fully, but here, because the Parish Mishnah is a translation from Arabic, here's the original Hebrew, so it'll be important to see how it'll be medayik very carefully in his words. So he describes how the Mesorah happens. Like the Rabbeinu Yonah says, the explanations that are needed to understand the Torah Shebichtav were given over at Har Sinai. The Pasuk, the Gemara in Brachos, deals with Torah Zu Torah Shebichtav, Vahamitzah Zeh Perusha. V'tzivanu la'asos ha-Torah al-pi ha-mitzvah. And we're commanded to keep the Torah, Torah Shebichtav, based on the mitzvah, the Torah Shebaal Peh. U'mitzvah zu inikras Torah Shebaal Peh. Kol Torah kasu Moshe Rabbeinu kodem shiyamas bichtav yado. And all the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down in his own hand. He wrote it with his own hand. He wrote Torahs. This is v'nasin sefer l'chol shevet v'shevet. V'sefer echad nasnu v'aron l'ad. He took the Torahs, he gave one to each shevet, and he put one in an aron to stay there forever. The Torah Shebaal Peh, he didn't write down. He commanded it. He explained it to the Zakenim, to Yehoshua, and to all of Klal Yisrael. Everything that I've commanded you to do, the same lesson of mitzvah, which the Gemara said in the previous pasuk, is Torah Shebaal Peh. All the mitzvah, all the Torah Shebaal Peh, I commanded you to guard, and we have to safeguard the Mesorah. U'menezeh nikras Torah Shebaal Peh. That's why it's Baal Peh, because it wasn't written down originally. Af al pi shelo nichtava Torah Shebaal Peh. Even though it wasn't written, but Moshe still, just like he gave a safer Torah to each shevet, he picked unique individuals to explain in detail what Torah Shebaal Peh is all about before he passed on. Lamdem Arshabeno kula bebeis dino l'shim zekenim. Interesting language. What does it mean? I'm not sure what it means, the Beis Din of Moshe Rabbeinu. But in his Beis Din, he taught the Shiva Zakenim, and that's the whole portion of the Torah where we see that he gave them Smicha. Right? He continued his legacy on. So he taught the Shiva Zakenim, Eliezer, Upinchas, the Yeshua, Shloshim, Kibble, and Moshe. So the Zakenim got their Torah in the Beis Din. Eliezer, Pinchas, and Yeshua all got the Torah from Moshe. So far, it doesn't sound like consistent with our Mishnah that it's a specific Umasr li Yeshua. I would say that Pinchas, according to this line, you should say Masra li Eliezer Pinchas Yehoshua, and Yehoshua's third year. And then he says, "Li Yehoshua shehu talmido shel Moshe Rabbeinu, Masra Torah Shebaal Peh v'tzivu aleha." And Yehoshua, who was a Talmud, who was a student of Moshe, he passed on to him the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he commanded him regarding it. So Moshe Soloveitchik picked up on these two lines and asked a strong question. I don't understand what he's saying. He just told me that he picked unique individuals, the Shivim Zakenim, Eliezer, Pinchas, and Yehoshua. They all received the Torah from Moshe. And then he says, Yehoshua, who's his student, he didn't call anybody else a student except for Yehoshua, he gave him the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he commanded him regarding it. So what's he adding about Yehoshua? He just put Yehoshua in the previous category, and then he singled him out. What's unique about Yehoshua? Any suggestions? Do you want some thought? All right, the question is again.
He wasn't related.
What?
He wasn't related.
Who wasn't related? Yehoshua? No? What was it? So he was not related to Moshe? So therefore? Oh, you're saying Eliezer? Aha! So you're saying Eliezer and Pinchas were, before they were related to Moshe, so that would give him a unique role, right? That's true. And then how do you make it work? Meaning, what was he doing differently? He just told him that he taught him all Torah Shebaal Peh. He learned Merkabah from Moshe. And then he says again that Yehoshua received something and he was commanded regarding it. So what did he do to Yehoshua that he didn't do to the other three? So you're saying what makes him unique. But what did he add to him? So what Moshe Soloveitchik explained is that there are two roles that the Chacham can have. What he did to Eliezer, Pinchas, and Yehoshua is that he told them all the Torah that he knows. So they're all equal in terms of the Torah knowledge. But then, What does it mean? V'tzavu aleha, he emphasized to Moshe, to Yahushua as his Talmud, that you now are entrusted with the role, as the Pasuk said, v'tishmur lasos. You have to guard the Mesorah. So I'm entrusting, you might have all the same Torah knowledge. So in terms of paskening halacha, Yahushua, Eliezer, Pinchas, they could all be equal. You know, aselach harav, which we'll learn, you could pick either of any of them. But Yahushua is entrusted with more than just the Torah knowledge. He's entrusted with safeguarding, right? V'tzivu aleha. He commanded him. He gave him a mitzvah regarding the Mesorah. What did he command him to do? That you, for this generation, have to make sure the Mesorah stays pristine and is guarded for everything that it stands for that you receive from Har Sinai. So he gave him an added role as a safeguarder of Mesorah.
He was the leader after Moshe.
So how did,
it would have been natural for him to be...
Right, but this is what made him the leader. You're looking at it post facto. You're saying he was the leader. So, of course, this is before he was the leader.
Now, if I remember correctly, I think in the Chumash, Hashem,
he was chosen.
Chose
Yahushua.
That's who he's going to pick.
Right, so you're...
He was picked already.
Okay, so that it's not a surprise why he picked Yahushua, but I'm just explaining what he did to Yahushua. He didn't have to necessarily... He could have said, I don't need... What you see from this Rambam is a Chiddush, is that you could have said, you don't need this. Eliezer and Pinchas and Yahushua would have been enough. And we have the Zakenim, they were a group. But you see that at least for the first generation, maybe to go into Eretz Yisrael, that's what Yahushua is all about. Maybe we'll discuss Yahushua next week.
Why do you use the word pristine? That the Mesorah should be pristine when Yahushua got it. Where do you get that?
I mean, what does it mean that we safeguard the Mesorah? What are you guarding it from? What you're guarding it from is, although we're adding, like you explained, a very excellent question about the Holocaust and modern technology, that we are using our Mesorah to deal with new issues, you know, in 2014, but as a basic whole, we have, right, as the Rambam says, Lo Tia Torah Mukhlefes, the Torah is never going to change. So the tools that we received and the concept of the Mesorah stayed the same from...
You know, like pristine means like untouched.
Untouched, right. Untouched. Safeguarded. Right, exactly. That's what it means to safeguard.
But I don't know anybody who thinks of the Mesorah as something that's untouched.
Well,
there
have been additions to it in the sense that we've been able to apply it in new situations, and that then therefore gave us a new outlook on how to look at it. But what the
so
basic,
we're
right?
So we're tampering with.
But the basic whole of the Mesorah of what we received, we're never changing. We're applying it in new cases, which then gives us a new vision of what it included in it. But in the end of the day, it was included in that Mesorah. We don't make psak on our own. Right, every psak that's made, even in 2014, about something that was never invented until 2014, is still based on, you're going to trace that psak back from shoulder to shoulder all the way back to Har Sinai. That's what I mean.
Right, but that's not pristine. That's
meaning just the contrast. You know, what other people said is that, you know, in whatever year times have changed, and therefore, you know, Hilchos Shabbos goes out the window. That's what we mean in this case. So Yahushua's job was to be that special individual. And if you want, this is an example for our generation, or let's say the previous generation, there are a lot of Chachmei Mesorah. Right? This is what the title is all about. Bali Mesorah, to be wed to the Torah. What does that mean? There are a lot of Chachmei Mesorah. And we're not going to argue here, Chas V'Shalom, at all, who's greater. You know, was Moshe Feinstein greater than Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? We're not going to discuss that, and that probably shouldn't be discussed. But in every generation, sometimes not so easy to see until post facto, and you could argue maybe who it was for different groups of people. But every generation, besides there being tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, there's also certain individuals whose role was also to make sure, see to it, that the Mesorah gets kept in the way that it should be. And again, coming from Soloveitchik, in the, you know, the thought of the Brisker Mesorah, the idea of Mesorah comes up a lot. It's part of their Torah. They discuss a lot what the concept of Mesorah is. We didn't have time to discuss it, but there's a very important Brisker Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik in his Sefer on Al Torah and Zosa Bracha, where he deals with our Mishnah and exactly how the Mesorah works differently between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. It's not such hard reading. You take a look at that. But in the whole Brisker dynasty, that's a concept that gets emphasized, and everything they have that they've received of how to keep halacha is all very unique and specific Mesorah. And when the Brisker Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who was Rav in Brisk and then moved to Yerushalayim to escape from the war. So when he passed away, I think in the 50s, late 50s, I forget the exact year. So in New York, his nephew, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the Rav, gave a hesped, a very long hesped, on his uncle. And it's published in different places. It's called Mado, based on a paraphrase of Shir Shir, Ma Dodecha Midod, right? What's more beloved than a beloved, and he was playing on words, much more beloved than an uncle, a dod. So his uncle, Rabbi Yitzchak Zasloveitchik, and what he explains is, and amongst a lot of other things, when he wants to emphasize, what does it mean that Briskerov knew the Torah? How did he know the Torah? So he said that there are a lot of Talmidei Chachamim who know the Torah perfectly. They know, you know, as much as they can know, call Torah Kula. And the Gemara says, based on this pasuk, actually, the Briskerov discusses in this piece, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Morasha Kilas Yaakov, that Hashem gave us the Torah as a Morasha. What does a Morasha mean? Like we read here, like Yerusha, by Avraham Avinu, similar lashon, that it's an inheritance for Klal Yisrael. That it's something that we cherish as our inheritance. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, don't read it Morasha, read it Mu'urasa, Arusa, a someone who's betrothed, someone who's engaged. And the Gemara says that our relationship that we have to the Torah should be of one of marriage. It should be like we are engaged to the Torah. And what does Rav Soloveitchik say that means? That means that a person has to, what is Kiddushin, what is Erusin? It means you make a kinyan, you acquire it, you give the woman her ring, and you say, Harayim Mekudeshesli. So a person should try to seek after the Torah, become engaged to the Torah, try to acquire it, and you obviously know the person that you're about to marry, in a full state of marriage, you know very well. So you should try to get to know the Torah very well. And he says there were Chachamim in every generation who succeeded in that, and they were literally engaged the Torah, and they had the Torah under their fingertips, and they were able to pasken halacha properly. That's what the Gemara says. But if you learn about how the marriage process works, you know, nowadays this gets, you don't see this as clearly, but there are two stages to marriage. There's Erusin and Nisuin. So in our modern day weddings, there is, under the chuppah, he gives it a ring, and there's four or five different opinions exactly what Nisuin is. Some people say it's also the chuppah, but you know, we go to the yichud room, so the yichud is Nisuin. It's another stage, and there are actually halachic differences. If the halacha, for example, that a husband inherits his wife, that's only true from the stage of Nisuin, not from the stage of Erusin. So Nisuin's a more intimate relationship. So what the Rav said about his uncle is that my uncle, he says, had Nisuin, the language there is very beautiful, I'm not doing it justice. My uncle had Nisuin with the Torah. What does that mean? Not only did he know the facts of all the Torah, and like all the other Chachamim, but he had such a close, intimate relationship. The Torah he was wed to the Torah that it became such a part of him, that his natural intuition, before he even showed a source, if you asked him a question, before he even showed a source, his natural intuition was what the Torah thought. He had such a close relationship above him, he says. He was obviously, he's talking about his uncle, but you know, he's not, he's taking it seriously. He says he was a miyuchad shebedor in this role. And this is similar to what the Rabbi is saying about Yehoshua, that not for the same reasons, maybe next week we'll describe why Yehoshua was chosen, but Yehoshua was chosen to be this special person, to have this close, to be a Baal Mesorah, to have this close relationship with the Torah, to see Torah, the Torah successfully maintains itself from generation to generation. And if you learn about the life of the Briskerov and what he did, you could see that he really was this type of personality. A lot of what he did and what he spoke about was to safeguard the Mesorah, to protect. And Aaron Cutler happened to say a very similar idea in a hesped that he gave, and he said that we could trace back the Mesorah. Every group in Klal Yisrael has their own Mesorah and a valid Mesorah. He says the Briskerov's Mesorah I could trace back almost, he says, to Har Sinai. He says, because why? He received a very clear Mesorah from Chaim, his father, Chaim Soloveitchik, who received a very clear Mesorah from his forefathers, his family, which only a few generations back traces back to Chaim Volozhiner, who received his Mesorah from the Vilna Gaon. And apparently there's a Mesorah somewhere, you have to trust his Mesorah. The Vilna Gaon traced back to the Rambam, and the Rambam traces back himself to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai. And you could do that with a lot of people. But you see with the Briskerov, the way the Rav described him, as, and if you could, there's a lot to read about his life and what he accomplished to safeguard the truths of Torah, to maintain themselves, to continuously be true from every generation. And that continues today. Right? That continues today, that we, you know, we may never reach the level of Nisun with the Torah, but at least we could strive for it and reach the level of Erusin with the Torah. But we should know that there are Bali Mesorah out there today, and it's the same Mesorah that's been preserved, and that to attach ourselves to those Bali Mesorah and to strive for ourselves to know the Mesorah better and to appreciate it is a way that we could get a very close connection with the Torah and with the Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Right.